Blog Talk Radio.
My name is Tracy.
And I'm just plain Bill.
And we're here to discuss what appears to be the Democrats' all-out war on the truth.
Yeah. You know, that isn't new.
Oh, well, you know, up until probably about 2 weeks ago, I would suggest to you that they were engaging in guerrilla truth warfare.
Guerrilla truth. Okay, cool.
Yeah, where they kind of sneak around and make sneak attacks on the truth.
Yeah.
Kind of see them on occasion, you know, kind of IED, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Insipid ethical disorders.
Ah.
Yeah. And now it's, the gloves are off. It's full on. You know, straight ahead, we're not going to hide about it. We're just going to say the truth is our enemy.
Yeah.
It is getting bizarre out there. It is,
you know,
really,
it really is. Jeez. Did you pick up on the latest thing in regard to Christine O'Donnell?
No.
Well,
what?
Apparently in her debate with Coons, the bearded Marxist, she said that there is nothing in the First Amendment that speaks to separation of church and state.
Well, that's not ultimately true.
She has been called out by the left and even some on the right for that gross misstatement of fact. So I said, well, I don't think I'm wrong, but let me go back and reread the first. And she's right. There's nothing in there that says anything at all about a separation of church and state. What most people are referring to when they refer to that is the Danbury letter written by Thomas Jefferson, where he references a wall between the church and the state. But he wrote that in the context of assuring that pastor and congregation that the First Amendment could never be used or interpreted in any way that would deprive them of their religious freedoms. And so once again, the Supreme Court got it wrong when they declared, oh yes, there is a church, there is a wall of separation between the church and the state, and based that not on the Constitution, but on a private letter written by Thomas Jefferson. Hooray, hooray.
Well, okay, now you've got me somewhat curious that my own remembrances are not accurate.
Aha!
Because while it is clear, you know what the problem is here?
Huh. Yes.
Is that people continue to misinterpret the Constitution as, one, a rights giver.
Yes, that's true. They do.
And the second, that it is somehow that the Constitution somehow has something to do with we the people and how we live our lives.
Yep.
And for those of you that think that it in fact does those things, it is in fact none of the above.
Exactly.
Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. Let me see.
Yep.
Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion. Okay? What basically that says to me is that Congress is not in the business of picking and choosing religions for the country.
Yep. That's what it says.
That doesn't tell me that there's any separation of church and state. It's telling me that the government don't belong dealing with the issue.
Yep.
And that, I think it's rather interesting because it says, nor prohibiting the free exercise thereof. And
mm-hmm.
I would suggest, and of course, this is probably your point as far as the Supreme Court is concerned, is there is no actual, I would interpret this, and I think I have in the past in a more general way without explicitly stating this, I would suggest that a municipal government that prevents a nativity scene
mm-hmm.
on land is
yep.
in fact prohibiting the free exercise thereof.
Exactly. Yep.
Now, we all know I'm agnostic. And that the closest thing to religion I have is Tracyism.
Very good.
And I don't have any particular problem with religions, with people of any religion expressing their point of view, and that includes, I was going to say my dear Muslim friends, but I don't have any dear Muslim friends.
I don't either. Funniest thing.
I have some Mormon friends, and I have some Jewish friends, and I have some Baha'i friends, and a couple Hindu people that I would consider to be friends, but I don't have any Muslim friends. I don't think that that's an indicator of anything in particular other than Wisconsin is not what you would call a hotbed of Islam.
Neither is Hay Fork.
That may change here in San Diego in as much as, I don't know, over the last couple of days we've met a significant number of Indians here. I'm talking about Southeastern Asian, lower continent Indians, who seem to populate our medical system in increasingly large numbers.
Yes.
And I'm not suggesting anything other than the fact that they seem to be very good at what they do when it comes to medical.
Oh, yeah.
Bedside
manners leave a little to be desired, but they're good at what they do. My lady has a Indian doctor, and his bedside manner is atrocious.
People tend to think that I'm very short with people, that I'm very mean towards people.
Yeah.
When in fact it is just a very direct and to the point
mm-hmm.
Approach to people, and I don't seem to have any problem with Indians in that regard.
I don't have any problems with them. The only time I ever have a problem with any doc is that they won't answer my questions. At that point it's like I don't care who or what you are, you won't answer my questions. Screw you.
That's not my problem with doctors.
Yeah.
And that's not our problem with doctors. Our problem with doctors is those that think that, one, normal is what they've decided it is.
Yeah, that's true.
And, two, that you're going to be normal whether I have to slice off your legs and pigeonhole you in a square,
mm-hmm.
Hole.
Mm-hmm.
It takes all the hammers in the world.
Yep, exactly.
I got no use for either one of those types, and
yeah.
Those types usually have no use for me after about 5 minutes.
Yeah. Oh, Lord. I know.
When 20 minutes later, a new doctor shows up and says, I'm here to help you.
Yeah.
Good, because it was clear the last one wasn't.
Yeah, yeah.
So, anyways, enough about that. So, my position is, the free exercise, an exhibit of those. That is why, in part, I don't have... I think the burqa is stupid.
Yeah.
Okay. But then I also consider, and this probably will offend some of my Roman Catholic friends, the transmutation of things to be the body and blood of Christ to be equally stupid. So, but hey, you know, that's what they want to do. so, you know, I don't, I have problems with burqa. I have problems, you know, with, you know, people trying to blow up other people in the name of the religion. I had problems with, you know, Catholics, you know, 4 centuries ago, you know, burning people because they didn't, you know, espouse a particular attitude.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just don't have any problem with that. Anyways, O'Donnell doesn't seem to have a problem with that. You know, but Rand Paul runs into the same problems.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, he says, you know, he's a literalist. This is what the Constitution says. This is what, you know, can and can't happen. And, you know, your attempts to interpret it in a more broadly way is, in fact, wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Despite the common held misbeliefs that people have. So,
sure.
You know, obviously I have the same issue when we start talking about rights. So when I come across people. Anyways. So I don't have any problem with her position. And if other
mm-hmm.
people have problems with her position, you know, then they are herd animals.
There you go. Yeah. Yep.
So no, I didn't catch that. I did wonder about Michelle Obama, you know, campaigning in a polling place last week.
Yeah, I caught that too. I'm.
I didn't spend any time thinking about it.
Yeah.
Because, of course, now that she's the first lady, none of the laws apply to her.
Well, of course.
No rules. No laws apply to her because she's the first lady.
There you go.
I think people, we as a group, and I mean most conservatives, need to start tempering both the repetitions, the repeating by the GOP and the mainstream media of positions that are somewhat outside of conventional wisdom, but are in fact consistent with the Constitution, call them on the calling of people.
Mm.
I do it. You know I do it.
Mm-hmm.
When people, even on my side, start repeating stuff that's blatantly wrong,
mm-hmm.
I'll call them on it, even if, you know, I think they're attacking the right people.
Sure.
We need to pay attention that that type of problem is going on and that, you know, so who are the Republicans that are calling her out? Anybody in particular?
Oh, no. It was actually more blogger types than Republican office.
GOP establishment person who would make a really big mistake at this point. You know what? I think this is kind of interesting. It is my experience so far in the last year or so that the most educated people with regard to our Constitution
mm-hmm.
Tend to be us.
Yeah. Yes.
Conservatives in general.
Mm-hmm.
Tea Party people in particular
yep.
seem to have a pretty deep understanding of the Constitution.
Yep. Although.
And all its vagaries, and we don't seem to be willing to allow a whole lot of latitude when it comes to people continuing to misconstrue it.
Exactly. Although Karl Rove disagrees with you, his assessment is that Tea Partiers are unsophisticated because they haven't read Hayek. That was a quote.
Well, you know, here's my problem with Karl Rove.
Yeah.
Okay. I've been pretty consistent in the belief that his political acumen is highly overrated.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember the movie American President with Annette Bening and Michael Douglas?
No, I don't think I saw that. Which is, I don't see a lot of movies, so that's okay.
Basically, there was one part in there, and it was actually kind of funny, is what's his name that played the president in The West Wing was Michael Douglas' chief of staff.
Mm-hmm.
And Michael Douglas got elected president because 13 months before the election, his wife died of cancer.
Okay.
And basically the president said to the chief of staff, who had been his campaign manager, do you think I could have won if my wife had lived? And he said, I don't know. Now, what's interesting about that question is, for many of the same reasons that Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton would have won in 2008,
mm-hmm.
George Bush won, albeit extremely narrowly, in 2000 because, frankly, people just didn't want any more Clinton crap.
Exactly.
And, you know, Hillary or Obama would have won in 2008 because people just didn't want any more of, you know, Bush crap. And rightly or wrongly, McCain was painted with more Bush
mm-hmm.
Type stuff. So it's just going to change. People are just tired of that situation.
Yeah.
You know, I think in 2000 or 2004, Barack Obama would have gotten his head handed to him.
Yes.
So, Karl Rove benefited from the idea that he got Bush elected in 2000 when I don't think, I think just about anybody could have beaten Gore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 2000, Bush got his head handed to him in 2004 at the midterms.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And 2006, frankly, John Kerry, if you could have found a more useless candidate than Al Gore, John Kerry was it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Well, I don't know that, Karl Rove, exhibited any particular, political acumen that I would suggest warrants his reverence by damn near anybody. So
Exactly.
Karl Rove thinks that we're a bunch of idiots. I'm going to pretty much feel exactly the same way when he says that I do about Barack Obama.
Well, sure. Karl Rove is a political operative. Karl Rove was probably the architect of Bush's non-vetoes, of all of his failings as far as conservatives are concerned. And yet he has the temerity and the whatever to lecture us about how unsophisticated we are. And now, I suspect that he can count electoral maps much better than I can. I suspect that, given a normal race, he's probably better at handicapping it than I am. But when you come to conservatives, not just GOP, but conservatives, I think he misses the boat big time. So, if that's true, he's basically outlived his usefulness as far as the conservative wing of the GOP is concerned. The guy doesn't have any more useful function.
I don't think he has any useful function. I don't think he, you know, I think you're right. I think he's probably the architect of all the stupid shit Bush pulled.
Yep, exactly.
Which,
if you stop and think about it, was just a continuation of Clinton's triangulation.
Okay. Well, then what I believe Harriet Myers represented was Bush's attempt to try and reassert himself.
He picked a really bad way to do that, but yeah, okay.
Well, I don't know that, you know, George Bush was an extremely effective president when he spoke from the heart about the United States.
Yep. Absolutely no doubt. Couldn't be any doubt in anybody's mind that he loved this country.
And the problem, and here's the distinction, because I believe Ronald Reagan did exactly the same thing.
Yep.
Here's the distinction between the two. Ronald Reagan lived that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
George Bush understood it.
Yes, and I think that there's one other distinction.
Okay.
Ronald Reagan had a vision. George Bush didn't.
That I would agree with that also. Ronald Reagan had a way to look at the country. You know, somebody said it today. Oh, someone that I hate listening to on the radio.
Oh.
Dr. Laura.
Ah, okay.
On my way up to the hospital this afternoon, for my little 10-minute drive, she was on, and some woman was going on and on about her son wanting to join the military, and she thought it was such a horribly bad idea.
Really?
And, well, she thought it was dangerous, and she didn't want her son to do that, and, you know, there's lots of things he could do that would be really beneficial, and... You know, why do it in the military?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Anyways, Dr. Laura said, you know, you're either going to support your kid or you don't.
Yeah,
you know,
that's true.
What he's doing is, here's an entire group of people that are going out to defend strangers and defend an ideal, and nothing could be more honorable.
Absolutely.
That was the end of what I heard, because it went to commercial and I got to where I was going.
Yep.
You know, after that, you know, before the commercial ended.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh.
And yeah, Reagan's vision was that ideal. He looked at it and said, "There's no reason we can't live up to that ideal."
Exactly.
We just have to decide that's what we're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I don't think George Bush has that ideal as something that can be lived up to. I think he believes exactly like his father did, which is, it's really nice, but we live in the real world.
Exactly. And so we're going to do this, this, and this to triangulate that, that, and that, and it'll all be good in the end. And that leads me into a segment that I saw on Kabuto today. I don't know, do you ever get a chance to watch him?
I do like him. I do think he's a pretty good interviewer. I think he's got a pretty good handle on economics.
Yep.
I've watched him go against O'Reilly's populism and just decimate him.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the advantages of being retired is I get to watch these things now.
John. I don't remember what he calls his last word, but, you know, I almost never disagree with what he says at the end.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
But what
in any event, Cavuto had on Senator Dorgan today. Dorgan is a senator that is leaving office, not going to run for re-election. flaming lib, but has a reputation for being this calm, cool, demeanor dude. And on Cavuto, he said that, alluding to what was going to happen on November the 2nd, pretty much conceding that, just alluding to it, and he said what he really hopes is that there can be compromise. And it's a good thing there were no hard, sharp objects close to me, because I would have thrown it through the TV set. Here is a guy whose party from, 2007-2008, made things pretty much go their way, whose party from January of 2009, when they took over the House and they already had the House, they increased their margin in the House and they took over the Senate with a veto-proof majority. And here is a guy whose party absolutely shut Republicans out of any consideration in terms of amendments, in terms of input into any of the bills, and now he's talking about compromise. And it brought to mind this. If you have been politically aware for, oh, I don't know, the past 15 years maybe, 10 years, 15 years, something like that, you know that compromise is the art of ratcheting ever upward big government. It is not about taking it down. It is not about making it smaller. It is always ratcheting upward in terms of the size of the state. So for him to, after all of the shenanigans that they pulled in 2009 and 2010, for him to talk about compromise just absolutely set me off.
Well, it's not even a matter of triangulation. It's,
no.
we can't do what we want to do, so now we need you. But, you and I and other people kept saying there was no benefit to joining in. And see, this is why I didn't care that Obama was shutting the Republicans out. Remember, I was really hoping that he would continue to do that, because we got one or two or five Republicans that are willing to sell out in a heartbeat.
Yep.
Willing to shut us out, that kind of makes solidification of our opposition, a more done deal.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you have someone like, what's his name? Spector.
Arlen, yeah.
So
Arlen.
I guess my response is, I don't consider it to be triangulation or even opening to triangulation. I think you're right. This is always about more big government. It's never about less government versus more government.
Exactly.
You and I and a lot of other people call them, Dems light.
Republicans
have a tendency. What is it? The thing that I keep saying over and over is the first question Congress must ask is not how much of a law, but whether a law should be done at all.
Exactly.
It's the first question that I want this new Congress to ask. It is not how much government spending we're going to do, it's whether we should spend at all.
Yep.
And most of those answers are going to be no.
Exactly.
And people are going to have to pay attention to the idea that there's going to be still people screaming out there, you got to do something, which is what's driving me crazy about conservatives, Tea Partiers, GOPers, establishments, rhinos, that are all saying the government's got to fix this thing. And
yeah, exactly.
And I'm sitting there like going, Bullshit.
Yeah, exactly. Call it like
not
it is.
Ability to fix anything.
No. You know,
so,
it makes me tired when I hear people that are supposedly conservative put forth that argument. Well, there's something the matter with it, so we have to fix it. First off, you don't know that there's something the matter with anything. Second off, the best thing that government could do in most cases is simply stand aside. If there is a big enough problem, private enterprise is going to figure it out, and they're going to have a solution. But that's not going to involve government. I mean, there are so many places that we can cut government. So many places. Department of Energy, Department of Education, just to name two. Department of Energy came in when? 1976, 77? We spent how many billions of dollars on that? And we are now more dependent on foreign oil than we were then. What did they do? Well, they certainly didn't live up to their billing of, oh, we're doing this so that we can become more energy independent. No, that isn't what happened. Same thing with Department of Education. If you look at a graph of expenditures for education, the spending side is almost a logarithmical upward curve. Test scores are absolutely flat. What in the world good are they? They haven't done anything. They haven't improved our test scores. They haven't improved our education. What in the world are you doing? And why are you spending all of that money that you take from the states to begin with? Why are you doing that? For me, it doesn't make any sense at all.
It's social engineering.
Yes, it is.
And it's social engineering, and of course I have my problems with conservatives that want to do that too.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone on down that thinks that they know what is the right way to live, and they want everybody to live that way. God damn it.
Yep. And that's human nature. I mean, I'm not condoning it or anything else. I'm just saying that's human nature. Governments ought to resist that. They ought not to encourage it.
Right. So let the damn conservatives lead the way. By asking the simple question every single time somebody comes up, there's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Question. Yeah. So what are we supposed to do about it?
Exactly.
Or why is it our problem to fix?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly. And so much of that is automatic. I read an article yesterday about international building standards, international building code, that apparently California has adopted. One of the things that international building code requires is a sprinkler system in residential houses. So all new residential construction is going to have a sprinkler system. It's not even a fire suppression system. It's only designed to give you enough time to get out of the house. It isn't going to save the house or anything like that. It's just enough time for you to get out of the house. Well, there's a big problem with that, because those things are designed to work
high
on
pressure volume.
Well, yes, but they're designed to work on municipal water systems, pressure and volume. Well, you know what? most of us out here in the hinterlands don't have municipal water. We're working off of wells, out of the rivers, whatever. But we do not have municipal water. And yet
which
we're going to
have 80 PSI at the tap.
Nope. I don't because my pump, I don't have my pump dialed up to that. I've got it dialed up to 60 pounds. But the problem is there is no way for a lot of people to comply with that. And yet, if they do want to build, they're going to have to comply. So, did we have a problem? Yeah, that's kind of in the fire department's bailiwick there. Not governments in terms of, well, we're going to protect you from yourself. We're going to require you to have this system. I'm sorry, I don't want the system. Can't use the system. And there's a lot of people like me. So, it's kind of like, is there a problem? Maybe. Why don't you solve it at the local level instead of trying to make this a state or a national problem? But we aren't going
to. I said that recently to somebody else too. Your argument that this is a states' rights issue versus a federal issue sounds really good, but you're very much statist at the state level.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not an improvement.
No, it isn't. I mean, that particular...
And they said, well, you have better control over electing local officials than you do, or state officials versus federal officials. So I'm like, have you ever lived in Chicago?
Yeah, really. Or California. it doesn't make any sense. I mean, that kind of a problem needs to get solved at a local level. I mean, and that's really kind of the criteria. I mean, once you discover you have a problem, then you ought to be saying, okay, where should that problem be solved? If it's a open borders problem, yeah, that's probably national in conjunction with states. If it's a fire safety problem, that's probably down at the local municipal level. I mean, why would you want a state government designed to serve San Francisco, Los Angeles, those places, telling you what you need to build in the rural areas of this state? Doesn't make sense.
It is nannyism.
Yes, it is.
It is people going, we have a huge big problem and government has to fix it. It is people saying, this is terrible what happened to these poor people. Somebody ought to do something.
Mm-hmm.
It just drives me crazy. And, that's another reason why. You know about what's her name? CJ, what was the girl that was in your school that died?
Deanna.
No, here in Poway. Chelsea's Law.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm. My problem with Chelsea's Law is that it treats somebody, as somebody that cannot be rehabilitated. Now, before every conservative in my hearing my voice goes, "Are you crazy?" I have no desire to rehabilitate anybody that goes to federal prison. Or most state prisons, for that matter. I want them punished.
Yeah.
Okay? But a punishment has a beginning, a middle, and an end. and you do not start punishment and then leave it open-ended just because of a particular crime.
No.
And that's what Chelsea's Law does. That's what most hate crime
That's
does.
True.
Is it says, yeah, this is the punishment, but because we didn't really like what you did, we're going to make sure that that punishment sticks forever. That's why I disagree with, you know, sex crimes registries.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody commits a sex crime, I think it's heinous, cut their balls off.
Yeah,
and then you can let them go. Or if you don't want to cut their balls off, you know, send them to jail for, you know, 20 years so that they don't, you know, the only way they ever get it back up is with a pump or Viagra or a rod.
Yeah, there you go.
And then let them go. But what you don't do is you don't send them to prison for 2 years and then force them to be punished for the next 50.
Yeah, right.
And that's ridiculous. That is government socially engineering crime and punishment.
Yep.
I don't want them, it's bad enough at the federal level, I don't want them doing it at the state level. I don't want them to do it at the county level. I don't want them to do it at any level.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with that. The only thing that I would say is that, in terms of rehabilitation, almost every study that I have looked at says it is really difficult and not very successful in terms of rehabilitating a sexual predator.
Right, which is why I say cut the balls off.
Yeah, there you go. although typically it is not about sexual pleasure. It is really much more about
let's be honest, okay? There are women that are sexual predators.
Yeah. Yeah.
For them, I have an appropriate response to that too.
Oh, really?
Yep. Cork and superglue.
Yeah. Very good.
Oh.
Oh my goodness.
Only because there ain't too much to be cutting off.
Yeah, right, exactly.
That makes it work as far as they're concerned. Although I do wonder how much it is of wanting to have a baby by some of these boys.
You know, I don't know. That would be an interesting sociological pursuit.
You know what? I'm not interested in the sociological study.
Well, actually, I get kind of interested in them only because
Do
I like watching?
You're one of those people that likes watching train wrecks.
No, it isn't so much. It's more a matter of, God, I wonder what makes that person tick. And we just, in many, many cases, we don't know. And I'm, you know, I'm okay with that.
Don't care.
Yeah, well, I'm, you know.
Victoria loves true crime stories.
Oh, yeah? Yeah?
And I got no use for him.
Okay.
But he committed a crime, you know, but then, and they can prove it, let him go to jail.
Sure. That's fine.
I care less if O.J. Simpson killed his wife.
I am not any kind of a fan of, you know, midnight basketball or underwater basket weaving or anything like that in terms of, oh gosh, we got to give kids something to do, keep them out of trouble, et cetera, et cetera. I think if you do the crime, you do the time, and, you know, that's kind of the end of it. Does that need to be open-ended and forever and ever? No, doesn't. At the same time, it needs to be punitive enough that you really don't want to do any of that again, which is why there ought not to be televisions in cells and all of that kind of stuff. you know, that's just, that's supposed to be time, folks. It's supposed to be, I'm going to sit here and contemplate my sins so that I don't do that anymore.
I don't want them sitting around contemplating their sins.
I do.
You know, no, I want them, you know, out busting rocks. I want them digging ditches and then refilling them.
Ah, okay. Yeah, well, yeah. That works, too.
Idle hands are the work of the devil.
Oh, yes, indeed.
you know, if we're going to punish somebody, punish them.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
If you're going to play mamby-pamby bullshit crap, then don't bother.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, hell, just make everything legal and then you don't have to worry about it.
Oh, no, I'm all for concealed carry. No, I'm all for open carry.
No, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying make everything legal and then you don't have to worry about it. But I'll tell you what, you stomp on my foot and I'm going to pull my gun out and shoot you.
Free exercise thereof.
There you go.
an absolute response. Well, you know, I'm writing it that way.
Yeah.
I'm writing it that way that you have the unencumbered ability to respond to threats to your rights with all due force necessary to prevent the interference or to eliminate the threat.
I don't really have a problem with that.
You know, I'm all for drone attacks.
All for what?
Drone attacks.
Oh, drone attacks. Yeah.
I'm all for nuking Mecca.
Yeah.
You know, all being, you know, eliminating threats.
Exactly.
Right. Do you remember that discussion with the ACP when we were working on the creed and the everything else about the idea that you know, you had the right to respond to all threats, no matter where or no matter how.
Sure.
Those threats were expressed.
Yep. I remember that.
You know, some people said that could give you the right to go ahead and nuke Mecca, and I'm sitting there like going,
Yeah. That's an accurate assessment. Yes.
Is that what you really mean? Yeah.
Uh-huh.
You know, Ahmed Dinejad says, I want to wipe Israel off the map. I'm thinking, that's an invitation.
Yeah, it certainly is. You know?
I consider it.
I mean, is there collateral damage? Yeah.
A verifiable and intentional and quite emphatically, you know, desirous of him to do so.
Mm-hmm.
I consider that to be a threat, and frankly, you know, I don't want to miss, you know, 10 meg, you know, 20 meg takes care of, you know, a pretty good spread of land.
Mm-hmm.
I would have liked them to do that when he was in Lebanon.
Yeah. Yep.
Just saying.
Well, you know, that also has an added benefit. If people know and understand that, they won't let their leaders get out of line. They'll take care of the problem before anybody else has to.
Yeah, they don't want to face that kind of threat.
Hell no. I mean, you know, oh, I'm going to be collateral damage? I think we better take care of this.
That, or I'm going to find the president's daughter and live next door.
Yeah, well, I don't know that that saves either one of you, but okay. All I'm saying is this. It's just another version of accountability. You have to hold officials, elected or otherwise, accountable. If you don't, you get Saddam Hussein and his rape rooms. You get Ahmadinejad, I'm a dinner jacket, whatever his name is, saying, "Oh yeah, we're gonna annihilate Israel." You get the Sudanese killing anybody and everybody, it seems. At some point in time, you got to hold those people accountable. If you hold them accountable, you'll make sure that those kinds of things don't happen.
Correct.
Same thing goes true for us here. Not to that degree, but if we don't hold our politicians accountable, You get things like, and I forget.
Don't ask, don't tell.
Well, no, I wasn't thinking about that. I was thinking about a comment that apparently was made today by somebody in GOP leadership who was apparently walking back the assertion that we would defund and repeal health care. Now, I don't know if that was a trial balloon. I don't really care if it was a trial balloon. Whoever said that has got to know that that isn't going to fly. Period. So we have to hold them accountable.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and, you know, anybody that suggests that it's, I don't know, not possible. You know, I don't care if Barack Obama vetoes every single attempt to repeal Obamacare that we do.
Yep.
I don't care if he does it 10 times. I don't care if he does it 100 times. But he better damn well do it once.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly.
If people think, well, he's just going to veto it, so we're not going to do that, I find that to be 10 miles of bullshit.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, there was another segment on Cavuto today, but it speaks exactly to that point. And Cavuto was talking to a candidate for a Republican congressional seat, and he was from, I don't remember where. Wasn't from California, anyway. And so Cavuto was trying to kind of put him on the spot, which he should. And he said, well, you know, what are you going to do if the current Congress doesn't do anything about the Bush tax cuts? Are you going to pass a law that says all of them are extended, either temporarily or permanently? And then if Obama vetoes it, how are you going to counter the argument, look at those evil Republicans, they sacrificed 98% of the American people for those fat, rich, bastard 2%. And I thought, boy, that's a really weird way to frame that question. Because the real answer to that question is, Mr. President, you just vetoed a bill that extended all of the tax breaks because you have some kind of hatred for the people who provide jobs. End of story. And you make that meme stick. Barack Obama vetoes bill aiding job providers. I don't know that I would want to have that hung on me.
Well, the Democrats have been hanging it on Republicans for the last year.
Mm-hmm. They have.
Who did I see that said that? You know, Republicans are, you know, stopping, you know, job creation by vetoing against stimulus. And I'm sitting there going, you know.
Yeah, right.
Creation and stimulus. There's no job creation and stimulus.
The president himself admitted that. Said, oh, well, I guess there really weren't any shovel-ready jobs. Gee.
You know,
and $1 trillion to find that out, huh? Thanks.
We're in agreement that,
yep.
As usual,
not always, but usually.
I think, maybe I'm speaking out of turn here. I'm pretty certain at this point that the Republicans are going to burn the Tea Party bad next year.
They're going to burn it or bury it?
They won't be able to bury it. They're going to wish they could burn it once they get wind of it. I think the GOP is going to betray the Tea Party next year.
Yep. Absolutely. I don't think there's a shred of doubt about that.
And I also agree with Rush and virtually anybody else that has a modicum of brain that Obama has no intention of triangulating at all.
No, nope, I agree. I agree.
And that means that the only way that those two things to be true are that the GOP is going to come groveling at Obama's feet. Now that we're going to get blamed for things.
Yeah, exactly.
Because we actually have power in Congress, you know, rather than you blaming us and we not actually have any power, and so we kind of ignored that. Now that people can actually blame us for being in power and opposing you, we don't want to oppose you, so what do you say? We do a compromise.
Yep. Exactly. Exactly.
I am so absolutely certain that they're going to do that.
Yep.
There are times when I'm beside myself.
Yeah, I know. One of the things, and I've just been hearing this lately, just actually the last 2 days on Twitter, and I don't know who said it. It's been attributed to Rush, but I'm not sure that that's accurate. But in any event, the comment was made that if you betray the Tea Party, you will find out what third parties are made out of.
Well, that's why I think ACP is in a wonderful position.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I think that ACP is a natural home for most of the Tea Party. Not all of it, but most of it. And if that's true, then both the Dems and the GOP have got a really tough row to hoe. Now, there may be enough Tea Party candidates get elected that the GOP isn't going to simply be able to write that off. But if they do, I'm thinking they are not going to be long for the world. And I think that will become really apparent in 2012. I mean, we're going to be stuck with whatever we get on November the 2nd. Whatever that is, we're stuck with that for 2 years. There just isn't anything else that you can do. But I think that if they betray the principles of the Tea Party, whoever does that is going to have a really tough row to hoe.
If we will stand.
Yes.
And
yep.
Hold them accountable.
Yep, exactly. But I keep hearing people talking about that. You know, the question is, will we do it? Will we call out the GOP when they go off the reservation? Now, I know I will. But
I will.
That's me. So you and me need to start the movement. That says
I'm gonna give them until, let me see, Valentine's Day.
Yep.
I'm gonna give them the benefit of the doubt until Valentine's Day.
Yeah. Nice.
I don't think it's going to take them more than a couple weeks, you know, to show how much they're willing to bend over and grab cheeks.
Yeah, yeah. Yep.
But I could be wrong. We could be wrong.
We could. I'm willing to prove that. They could.
Hey, we got 30 seconds.
Hey, okay, Arkansas Traveler, Mama Gurkha, Louisa Ma, Hallie 5, if you're listening, thank you for listening. We appreciate it very much.
Yep, and even if you're not listening, well, you're lost, not ours.
Yeah, that's right.
We had a good conversation. William, next
hey.
Week I think we start actually listing the races for the
yep.
for our show.
Yep, I've already started
the
list.
Cool beans. Everyone else, have a good week. We'll talk to you next.
Okay.
William, we're in the green room, and I'm cutting it short.
You betcha. Nope, you got to go take care of biz, and that's fine. I don't have a problem there. We will talk to you next week, and we'll have our list of races to watch.
All right. We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Good night, everybody. See you next week.